Hey, it's Cindy Howes and Lizzie Noh from the podcast Basic Folk, honest conversations with folk musicians.
Basic Folk is truly changing the game with our well-researched deep dives that aim to empower the listener while fostering the folk community.
I basically am writing worship music for youth group rejects.
Maternal regrets and maternal guilt are universal.
I try to make things that are beautiful and that are made with like a purity of intention.
You can listen to Basic Folk on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or at basicfolk.com.
Speaking of fill-ins, I've got a couple stories about some tour manager fill-ins.
Don't tell me, because Kyle's my tour manager, who's also, you know, producing this podcast. But he's going to have to take a weekend off in November. And I told my booking agent, like, unless it's like big money, I'm not doing it without Kyle.
That's me. If my drummer and guitar player can't do the show anymore, I don't take the offer.
If that date
doesn't work for them, I'm like, nah, not worth it.
Hey, everybody, this is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends in my van.
Thank you, Buck's Backyard, for this front yard.
Buck's Front Yard.
Bishop's the best.
It's a great place, man.
Yeah, it's a great place. I just wanted to start with like the most important question, which is, do you remember the Bahamas?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was lovely and stressful. It was amazing and fearful.
I just feel right because people, I mean, I'll just give a little background and you can tell. We were on a boat, him with his wife, me with Paul, of course. We were triple dating on a boat. And
50-foot catamaran.
It was, yeah, not like a small boat, like a great sailboat.
Yeah.
And that was when COVID like hit. And so we didn't have service.
March of 2020.
And yeah, so every time we'd get service, it would be like, your shows are canceled. All your gigs are canceled.
Like we would just be drinking and playing stupid games and snorkeling. And then all of a sudden we get back on the boat. We go, oh, we're getting near another island. Oh, I've got service. Apparently people are fighting for toilet paper.
Right. It was so.
Oh, apparently next week's shows are canceled. And then it was a month's shows. And then.
Right. And then my manager was like, I have to prepare you. You are not coming back to the same America. And I was like. And we're just sitting with like blue water and like drinking rum and just like having the best time. It was so sweet though to be there with you guys, because I feel like it was the last blissful moment. Like for the rest of our lives, COVID will always be
true.
A thing.
It didn't really exist yet. And all the heartache and you know, in our career, the huge money loss and excessive amount of wasted time it felt like we were dealing with, which everyone was, you know, but when you literally travel to play music and stuff and you can't, that's just, it's such like the handcuffs were on, you know?
Yeah. And I would do COVID. Everyone's like, would you do it differently? And I was like, absolutely. I would do it so different, but we didn't know how long it was going to be.
Right.
We didn't know. Yeah, we didn't know anything. And so
at that point, we didn't know if we could get back in the country.
We should have stayed.
Yeah. And we had someone babysitting our little boy, Luca. And he was just a baby at that point, like one. Mm-hmm. And we were like, I guess we could always sail through the Gulf of Mexico all the way from the Bahamas around Florida and sail back to Corpus and make our way
to get to your baby
back up home to our baby. Cause we, you know, we had to get back in, but they said, I'm not sure if they're going to let you back in the country coming from another country right now.
If you didn't have Luca and Paul didn't have Sierra, we would have definitely stayed in the, I feel like we would have been like, let's just ride this out.
Totally. I mean, seriously, I would have been game to just say, hey, let's just stay here for, I don't know, at least a month or two and see what happens. And we may have been there for like a year.
It was more fun for me though, because you're right. Because you're such a, like, me and Paul could have done that the whole time because you cook all, like, you're such an amazing cook. So like, I feel like you were doing more of the work than we were, but
I enjoy it.
That's what you say. But yeah,
that's what Cassie, she's always like, I'm glad you enjoy that. And I'm like, well, to a point,
right.
You know, until like with anything, when it starts to feel like work, too much, you know, always touring, you know, like you go to play a show every night And I always told my guys, if it starts to feel like work, crack a beer. You know, we don't want this to feel like work. You got to, there's a different mentality you have when something feels like work. Same thing with the cooking, you know? And so
I love that.
Yeah. So I always just said, make it feel like it's something fun. We're here to hang out. You're having a good time and everyone's attitude's always better, you know?
Yeah.
But you can't get drunk.
Right. I know. It's a fine line.
Yeah. But no, cooking, I just love doing it. You know, I don't like doing the dishes, but.
Yeah, nobody does. Paul is a good dishwasher, though. He's real good at it, so.
Glad he's good at something.
Everything else he kind of sucks at, but he's real good at washing dishes.
He's multi-talented dude.
He's a little bit talented.
Yeah,
and
a little bit.
I have a feeling we're going to talk about him a little bit throughout this podcast. I got to get my notes out because I made some notes for you today. Oh, those are AJ notes.
I don't want AJ notes.
I know the first thing was, my first question for AJ was, how many heart attacks have you had? And do you plan on having any more?
Is it two?
He said it was one and two overdoses. So I always thought it was, two. And anyway, it was, yeah.
We love AJ.
We love AJ. And
dearly.
Oh, bless you. My dog sneezed. I was going to change for the video purposes. And then I was like, well, I'll just turn my hat around backwards and it'll be fine. And I forgot to do that too. So sorry, video watchers.
She just decided to wear this hat again on this day.
Right. And a black shirt again.
Again, but we're in a new location.
That's true.
Sort of.
We pulled the van around for some shade. I was explaining to Mark what the podcast is, which I didn't do with my last episode, but.
Airplane. Hey, I got to ask, what is the rating? Is this R, PG-13? What are we?
You can say whatever you need to say. I feel like. Okay. A well-placed cuss word is fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you can always use that bleep feature if you need.
Yeah.
It.
Or like, I thought about just going, live, right? Sorry, Mom. Like over the top of it. I don't give a sorry, Marilyn. Like, you know, just like, because it's a mom. AJ calls it the mom filter, which it is. It is.
That's good. I like that.
Okay. So I wanted to bring you on here because you have been doing music for a long time, and so have I. And this is only a conversation that you can have with people that are like veteran, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just an interesting thing because when you talk about your band, it's like you're talking about your band, but you're always talking about different groups of guys.
Yeah.
And especially after COVID, I've been dealing a lot with like fill-in players when I'm trying to find.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth talking about, and I want like to get some insight from you because there's been great moments, and we'll talk about both the good and the bad.
Sure.
But I think it'd be more fun to start with the bad.
always the bad, the messy, the sloppy.
Yeah. I feel like I've never, like, fortunately for me, I've never had like a bad drum fill in.
Okay.
Is it, do you think it's like easier? Maybe it's just easier to fill in on drums than it is on any other instrument. But then I started thinking about it. Right. Mm-mm. Guess who my fill-ins have been? Michael Kelton, who now plays for, which I met through you, plays for.
He was my drummer for 5, 6, 7 years, like outstanding dude, incredible drummer. So.
Yeah. Now plays for Pat Green. And then Brian Zanotti one time, and then went to play for Wade.
Yeah.
And then Dylan Estrada, who went to play for Kyle Park. So I don't know if like. I've just gotten lucky.
You've had a good caliber of drummer fill-ins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I haven't needed that many because my drummer now has not even missed a show ever, I don't think. So.
We'll get to that later, how the reliable people are just like a godsend and praise some people. I've had a couple. Luckily, for years and years, I had Michael Kelton playing drums, which was fabulous. Then I kind of went through a few, for the last many, many years, I've had Ken Furr, who actually lives out in El Paso now. So he's a long commute to shows. He flies to town lots of times to do.
He's great.
Do stuff. He's great. He's been with me for many years now. And, Ashton Shanafelt played with me for a good year or so in there. And she did amazing work, but, there was some points where I had a few fill-ins, and I absolutely hate having to have a fill-in, like lead guitar player or drummer. I'm not as worried about the bass. I'm not saying I started on bass years ago, but I'm not saying bass is easier, or I just feel like the audience, or it's not even the audience, because lots of times they don't know, but I feel like it's me. I get more thrown off playing a show if the drummer does something out of the ordinary.
Right.
You know, because I'm so about the, just the beat is so in there. Or if the lead guitar player is not doing certain melodies. Because when I write songs, those times I'll write like even some of the guitar melodies and stuff that I want to hear in there.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes when a guy comes in and learns it, they just say, hey, I'm going to ad lib and just do this. Right. And they don't do some of the quintessential things that you really wanted there. But
yeah.
I had a drummer that did one gig with me. He planned to do more, but after one, I was like, it's just not going to work. Wasn't prepared, was horrible. Not good. But anyway, I don't want to.
No, ramble. That's great. I actually, like, it made me remember that I had a drummer fill in one time and he kept slowing down the songs, yep, like throughout the thing.
Tempo, man.
But he was like slowing it down in the middle of the song. And he was like, well, and I told him, I was like, dude, what? And he's like, well, you're singing behind the beat. So I just kept he was slowing down to my vocal, which was hilarious. And we got in like an argument. This was very, very early on.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, this isn't, that's not your job. Yeah. Like, and I'd sing, have you ever heard Willie Nelson sing? Like, can you imagine trying to drum?
Yeah, he's singing jazz, you know? He's like singing all around the beat. And the drummer's just supposed to keep it perfect. Like, I am a machine back here.
Uh-huh.
And I always tell him that. You just keep it I actually always encourage them to play with a click.
Right.
I don't demand it. If they're good enough to keep a perfect beat, I don't care if they use a click, but long as they sound like they're, and it can breathe a little. It's got to breathe a little. But
yeah.
You don't slow down. You don't follow the singer.
Like, what? And I'm like tapping my foot.
I love that. If you imagine the drummer following Willie Nelson.
That would make a great TikTok or like a great SNL skit. No, but I was following your vocal. Like, I don't know. That's very funny. Yeah. Well, I will say that you're right, because about bass, I don't really notice bass unless it's wrong.
As much.
Yeah. When it's wrong, it's like really obvious.
And, you can like tell them, hey, I don't want to hear any bass in my monitor or whatever. But you can't avoid the drums. Yeah. And I personally don't want to avoid the guitar and the lead guitar. There's so much melody there I want to hear. Mm-hmm. But the bass is super, super important. But I feel like a fill in on bass is an easier.
It is. Paul will say that.
To deal with.
And Paul filled in my very first fill-in situation with Paul. Was we'd been dating for a while, and I was like, oh gosh, how's this gonna go? You're gonna fill in for me on bass.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I love bass. He's like, it's one note. I mean, you know, it's like a lot, but he loves filling in on bass. It's a lot easier than guitar. He says that. So
did you know, years and years ago, I did a fill-in gig, and at that point I hadn't played bass in years and years, and I did about, I think, 3 or 4 or 5 fill-in gigs and tones in a few places around Austin for Paula Nelson.
I love her.
Years ago. This was like in the late 90s, like 98, 99. And I filled in bass for her for a couple months, and it was fun.
That's amazing.
I probably sucked, but...
I met her outside of Saxon Pub, and I was like, I watched her show, and I was by myself. I was in college, and I was like, you were so good, and she was so buff. Like, she's so cut, you know? She does, like, taekwondo or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and
I haven't seen her in a while.
She like called me from her phone and left me a voicemail and was like, hey, this is your new sister, Paula. Like, she was like the nicest person.
She's sweet. Yeah.
She's super cool. That's amazing. I didn't know you did that. Well, where were you all those times when I needed a bass fill in?
I don't do it anymore.
Okay. I was just about to be so mad. Like, one of my best friends. And I was like,
I don't even own a bass anymore. Yeah.
Paul has one. Yes.
Paul has one.
Well, after COVID, I was replacing a bass player and a guitar player at the same time.
Yeah.
It was the worst experience of my whole life.
Bass player and a guitar player at the same time.
It was awful. And after COVID, no one wanted to play. Like, everyone was like, no, I'm good. I'm going to stay home and do whatever.
Yep.
And I couldn't find any fill-in players. And like, now what I do is way different than when I started. Like, now I have charts. I have a bore tape.
Yeah.
I have.
And that's half of it. That's half of it. I have like a set list if I need to throw to a bass player to fill in, because I've got permanent drums and guitar, but I still use a fill-in bass player quite a bit. I have a couple different guys that kind of rotate.
Yeah.
But if someone new needs to come in, I have just great notes that like exact notes about each song. Here's the set list and here's where you can find all the recordings. And that makes it so much easier, long as they're willing to do a little bit of homework, just a little bit, you know?
Right. I try to make it as easy as possible. And it was just like killing me. Really, my drummer, he was like, hey, do you want me to take this over for you? And I was like, good luck. Well, he's done like 99,000% better job than me. Like, he's doing a great job at it. Like, he's killing the game. Because really, when you're dealing with fill-in players, your whole week is gone because you're getting them the set. You're doing that. Yeah. And now he's doing all that. They have
good.
He's killing it.
Delegate, boss.
Well, I'm bad at delegating. And then once you delegate, then you're like, I should have delegated a long time ago.
Then you're beating yourself up about not delegating sooner.
Yeah.
Speaking of fill-ins, I've got a couple stories about some tour manager fill-ins.
Don't tell me, because Kyle's my tour manager, who's also, you know, producing this podcast. But he's going to have to take a weekend off in November. And I told my booking agent, like, unless it's like big money, I'm not doing it without Kyle.
That's me. If my drummer and guitar player can't do the show anymore, I don't take the offer.
That
doesn't work for them. I'm like, nah, not worth it.
I love it. Okay. Yeah. So tell me about tour manager fill-ins.
I've got a couple. I'm not going to name names just to not call anybody out, since they're not real positive stories. But one, I had a tour manager filling in with me for a few weeks. You know, I might have hired him. It basically was trying him out, sort of, you know, because the other guy had been with me for a long time, was no longer with me. And so it's sort of, and all these stories are pretty much that. It's kind of a trying out a new guy, and it didn't work out. So I eventually moved in. So that's kind of a fill in, you know.
Was one of my notes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, if you do a great job, you're probably going to be in my band.
Yeah, you're probably going to get the job.
Oh, yeah.
And this one guy, I could already tell it wasn't going well. It just, you know, he was more interested in drinking at the shows and hanging out and picking up chicks, or, you know, just having too much fun, where you need that tour manager that's more like Papa Bear, you know, is going to kind of like make sure everything's running great.
Right.
Well, so, you know, I finished show, and one of his jobs was to kind of, you know, take my stuff, you know, because I would just walk off stage and sit my guitar on a stand and leave the stage and go to the merch table and do that bit. And his job was to kind of, you know, break my stuff down and all that. Well, I finished the show with my beautiful Gibson J200.
Oh, no.
Loved that guitar. Had it for many years.
Oh, no.
And the next day, we show up at the next show and open up my case. I put it on and I strum it, and it's like crazy out of tune. And I'm like, this guitar's never out of tune, you know, maybe the tiniest bit. And I strum it, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? A couple strings are kind of rattling. Well, I analyze it, and right at the block where the neck meets it, you could see the neck had been shoved in about a half an inch. There was just this giant curve and gap. And I was like, okay, somebody dropped this guitar. Like, it looked like it had been dropped right on the headstock.
I'm going to throw up.
It was just like horrible, and no one would admit to it. And I was like, hey, buddy, unnamed buddy, that what happened? It was fine when I put it away. There's no way that injury could happen in a case. Well, anyway, it once I got my guitar tech, Tom Oatley, shout out to him in South Austin, who's amazing.
I love that man.
He's amazing with guitars. He's fixed a lot of things for me and friends of mine, and sets up guitars great. Well, he was like, because of where it is, he goes, I can fix all kinds of breaks and stuff. He goes, that is a big major job. The block has been moved. And he was quoting me like, I don't know, $2,000, $2,500, more. Like, you know, the guitar is not that much more than that from new, but sentimental. But I just shelved it, put it in a closet, and one day I'll get it fixed, but switched guitars. And then another tour manager that I loved, who'd been with me a long time, kind of did the same thing. And threw my guitar was in one of those semi-hard soft cases that zip up.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't zipped up, threw it over your shoulder, was walking it out to the van. It fell out and cracked the headstock. And Tom fixed that one perfectly. I still play that guitar to this day. It's glued back together.
That's a great lesson, though, because anytime like I'll put like a guitar in a case or whatever, and Paul's like, if you don't latch it right now, like you have to always
pick it up.
Totally. Even if it's not you.
Yeah.
It's going to be
someone else. And it would have been great if he picked it up and it fell out right then. It probably would have been fine.
Right.
But it somehow it managed to go over his shoulder and march through the parking lot before it finally went boop.
Oh, man. It's hilarious, but it's tragic.
It is. It
is.
Oh,
my gosh.
Another tour manager, temporary tour manager. We had played a show up in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And we had done well. It was a festival and we'd sold a bunch of merch and it was a good night. We were after partying. I believe Blue Edmondson and me were both on the bill, a couple other people. So we were all in a hotel room after partying, having a good time. And eventually I was like, all right, I'm going to peel off and go to my room, go to bed. And my tour manager was still partying and partying and partying, I'm assuming. So the next morning we all load up in the van. We're ready to go. We're waiting on the tour manager.
Oh, no.
And we're like, where's dude? And I'm not going to name names, but. And so we're like, well, someone call him. So Michael Kelton called him, said no answer. It just went to voicemail. And then we went to the front desk and said, hey, what room was, so what's our other room? You know, we had like three rooms. What room, or maybe that night we had four. And we're like, what room is he in? Because he had a room to himself.
Ooh, big time, four rooms.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And so somehow it worked out where he even was in his own room. And we went up there, knocked on the door, had to go back downstairs, get a key because he wouldn't still come to the door. We thought, is he dead?
Right.
So we eventually get into the room. We walk in there and the dude is laying in bed, butt naked, cock out, holding an apple like this,
apple?
With one bite out of it. It had one bite, like the, is that Snow White? Is
yeah.
It, you know,
yeah.
Like the evil apple, the one bite out of it, just like. Passed out on the bed holding an apple just like that, balls out, swear to God. And we're just like, what the? And then as I look around past the shock of that, I look around the room and I see the floor and the bed and everything is covered with money, literally just laying everywhere.
Tell me that was not your money.
He had made it rain. Apparently, he was so jacked up that the money, you could tell, had been thrown. Just been thrown. Oh. I don't know if he had a little rager in there or if
by himself with his apple.
Naked throwing money. Woo! Photo shoot. I don't know what the hell it was. So I said, Kelton was with me. I said, pick up all that money. Pick it all up. And he was like, all right. And he's picking it all up. And I'm like, dude, wake up. Grab some water. We throw water in his face. And I'm like, dude, does he have a heart rate?
Yeah.
And finally, he kind of comes to and he goes, what up? And I'm like, what the hell
are you
doing? Why is my money slung everywhere? What's going on? And he wasn't coherent enough, big dude, so we couldn't carry him down the elevator, the stairs. Plus, he's butt naked, and we're not going to dress him. And so I said, all right, we're going to go to the van, and you've got 10 minutes. If you're not down there in 10 minutes, we're gone. He's half out of it. 10 minutes later, we leave. We're all the way down almost to Waco, and I get a call. And I went, oh, look. And I answer it, hey, dude, where are you? Where'd you guys go? And I'm like, dude, we left like, I don't know, 3 hours ago.
Yeah.
Do you know what happened? Do you know what you had, you know, did? And he was not aware of it and was like, well, how the hell am I going to get home? Figure it out.
Not my problem.
Figure it out.
Wow. That is one of my favorite stories. I think you've told me that one, maybe on a boat when we were all drinking a lot, but that's amazing. But it's also like some people are not shocked by their actions the way that you are shocked. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard a tour manager who, this will give it away who it is, but it doesn't. Anyway, they should know better.
Right.
Is the point. And I was like, you know, you're responsible for driving the van, doing whatever, loading in. I'll just kind of give a rundown. And then we get in the van and he gets in the passenger seat. And I was like,
got the same story.
Hey, you know what? And so Nathan, my old guitar player, drove. And so I'm like, what's happening here? So anyway, I was like, we stopped and I was like, is there a reason you're not driving? And he's like, oh, I don't have a driver's license. I have like a few DWIs and it's suspended or whatever.
Like, but I'm like, never driving. Like, not just today because I'm hungover.
Right.
I'm never driving.
I'm never going to be legally able to drive your vehicle, which is like one of the only things that I hadn't even had a tour manager really yet at that point. I was like, this is just to help us so we can get some sleep and you can't even drive.
Yeah.
Like those are things that you might want to disclose.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
The tour managers they have to kind of realize that that's part of the job, you know, they can't tie one on. They can't. I had a girl fill in for me and the same thing came down in the morning. We're all getting in our seats, sitting there. Finally, she comes down and she crawls back into one of the back benches and just lays down.
Good night.
And I'm like, well, this van's not going to drive itself. Like, what are you doing? And it's like, I'm like crazy hungover. I couldn't blah, blah, blah. And like the next night, it was like, you understand your job is not to get jacked up. Your job is to be able to wake up in the morning, rally the troops, uh-huh. drive us to the location. And the next morning she gets in and she starts it up, drives about 50, 75 miles, and then says, I don't think I can drive anymore. It's like I'm just worn out. And it's like, someone else take over. It's like, okay, this is your only weekend. Yeah. You're not coming back.
This is not going to work. No. Yeah. I drive sometimes first shift because it's quiet and I enjoy it.
I've driven a lot through the years because uh-huh. I don't know. I kind of enjoy it sometimes, but especially early in the day, you know.
Totally. But yeah, I don't want to get done with the gig and we're all drunk and then your tour manager's drunk too. That's like, oh, wait, no. That cannot happen.
Then you've got your other... your other guys that can sometimes fill in for you to drive, you know, and they're willing to do it. And I've got a little story about that where my, my guitar player, I'm not going to name names, but we had done a run through Colorado and we played Red River, Larry Joe Taylor's uh-huh. song. And the next day we were supposed to be in Snyder, Texas to play a funeral or a memorial. And so we got up early the next morning.
Why is that so funny?
I don't know. Like, I've got to get there. I'm playing a funeral.
Okay, guys.
We got to get to the funeral. It was,
load up.
You know, it wasn't the actual funeral, but it was like a memorial yeah. for a dude. And that was a fan and that we were going to play. And so the next morning, my tour manager at the time, he had, you know, with permission, had tied one on that night. It was all good. And this guitar player had agreed because he didn't drink. And he was like, I'll drive in the morning. No worries, guys. Y'all have fun tonight. And so.
I love when people say that. Yeah.
I know it. It's nice to have a guy in the band that doesn't drink. Too.
Yeah.
It's gold. Anyway, so we get in the van and we're all like hungover, crashing out. And so we leave Red River and we're going over here to Snyder, you know, I don't know, four hours. I don't know. And we suddenly, I wake up and things look strange to me. I kind of recognize it, but I'm like,
John Denver's full of shit.
This does not look correct. And I pull up my phone real quick and like hit the map thing to show me location where I'm at. We're in Santa Fe. We had gone from Red River straight down to Santa Fe. Way, like 3 hours out of the way.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, what? Where are we? What? Were you not using the map on your phone? He was like, well, I mean, I didn't ever turn it on. I was glancing at it. Because I must have taken a wrong turn in Albuquerque, but yeah. It wasn't Albuquerque.
You have had two pairs of gloves this whole time?
Yeah. Anyway, we made it.
That's amazing.
Eric, my tour manager, jumped in and floored it. And we could never, you know, you always try to beat Waze. Like carve time off uh-huh. of Waze. Like,
you cannot.
It says it's your arrive time. And we went like 100, like fast as our Ford Econo van could go. And Waze would never like, oh, you've gained 5 minutes. Oh, you've lost 6 minutes. Oh, you could never buy back that time. We were a little late, but we still, well, we got there and played two songs and it rained. So it was outdoors.
Was
so.
The guy still dead?
No, he rose from the dead and shook our hand when we got there right. And said, where the hell were you? We only did like two songs and it rained us out. So it was kind of
oh my
crazy.
Gosh yeah. I have a rain story that's appropriate for this moment.
Okay.
We had a fill-in guitar player, and this is when I was going through, I could not find a guitar player. Like, it was awful. We were really we tried everything, and finally everyone was like, hey, there's this guy, he can do it, whatever. I'd like, cool. So we do it. It did not go well the first like three gigs, and it was like a 7 gig run.
Oh, boy.
And so our fourth gig was with a big name and we were just opening, but I was still like, to me, it was worse than headlining because it was like a giant crowd with like
right.
people that I didn't want to see me suck. Right.
Right. Right.
So
right.
I texted that whole band and I said, hey, just so you know, I have a fill-in guitar player. It hasn't been going that well. Cut your girl some slack. Like, y'all know that I usually have a really good band, which I usually do.
Don't judge the band.
Right.
Don't judge.
And everyone was like, we get it. Been there. And then yeah. one of the guys in the band was like, yeah, I know, I heard sound check. And I was like, great. So then right before we play,
I heard sound check.
I mean, I'm like, your anxiety, you know, yeah. you know how it is when you have someone that your anxiety is through the roof.
Sure.
So I'm about to go on stage Jesus, the universe, all the God, who, whatever you believe in, sent down the most torrential downpour.
Gracias.
Yeah. And it rained and it took out the router for the soundboard. So oh, wow. By the time they got it
there
dried
was no
off,
recovering.
Nope. By the time they got it dried off and the speakers up, we had a 19-minute set. And awesome. So I just chose the good ones.
The best
songs.
It's
like, that was my moment of
like.
Yeah,
it's hard to jack up a 19-minute set, right? It's like right. Three long songs or four songs.
I just picked the ones that I was like, yeah. Okay, these are the ones that we've been doing the best at. but which is so strange to me because a fill-in gig is like a really hard thing. So it's really strange to me why anyone would take it if they didn't think that they could do it.
Right, or want to prepare for it, especially when you know you're going to be in front of peers and a big crowd, uh-huh. and maybe they just think, maybe they think they're good enough that they can wing it, and some guys can, you know,
true.
Even unrehearsed, they're just like, I'm super good on the fly, I'll figure it out, but
yeah, I had one guy who was definitely like good, but he did not learn my stuff or whatever, and we were like that an hour before our set.
Your dog literally just caught a fly and ate it. Good catch, Whiskey. You need some whiskey to chase that down.
Good girl.
It was some kind of bug.
Well, it's going to be on camera. Yeah. That
Good
was,
job.
Wow.
That's incredible.
That's funny because I've only seen her miss a million
really?
Times.
Whatever it
and
was.
And you watch her one time yeah, and she gets
one
it.
One time. Oh, got
wow,
it.
Oh, and I missed it. But he filled in and like an hour before the set, he was like, you know what? I say we just like scrap some of your songs and do like, do you know this one? This is a Keith Whitley song. Do you know this? And he starts playing like it. And I'm like, first of all, of course I know that song, but it's not in my key.
Yeah.
And we're not scrapping my songs for
something you've just suggested.
I mean, it was like mind blowing. Yeah. And then after the show, he was like, if you ever need me again, I was like, are you out of your mind?
Are you out of your mind?
Like the whole band was obviously so upset.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he didn't pick up on
right
that. But I guess that's the same type of person who wouldn't prepare no. properly. You no. know, it all makes sense.
I hate that when you go to do a show and anything just feels awkward. You know what I mean? And that's what it is. It's like half of getting up and performing is confidence. And when you don't have when you don't have that confidence of your band,
right?
You know what I mean? You just, you're lacking that confidence. You're nervous. You're thinking, oh, we're going to sound off. We're going to be loosey goosey tonight. It's not going to be firing on all freaking 12 cylinders.
And you have to smile yeah. and be like, and yeah, aren't we having fun? And you yeah. want to jump off a bridge. Like it's really difficult. So like do your homework or like, also, my other advice is like, don't hire friends to friends. Don't let friends fill in friends
drunk
gigs.
Oh, wait.
What does it think?
Fill in drunk.
Fill drunk. In at all.
No.
Like I had my most recent one was like a merch person. And it was like, I want to I'll come and do merch for free. And I'm like, great.
Oh, yeah.
At a festival, you know, yeah. it's hot. We're all backstage.
Have you ever hired merch guys and really like a fill in and really felt like you were losing money? Like something was being skimmed.
Ooh. Actually, I don't think I've ever had that. Have you had that?
Yeah.
Dang,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
I've had that where, you know, we weren't real good at like count ins, count outs and that kind of stuff.
It's people that say that you can do that are liars.
That's like, insane.
It's insane.
Well, I tried one method where you keep most of everything in the trailer or in the shop and then you only bring so much out on the road mm-hmm. and then you run out. Or, you know, and you only bring so much into the venue and then they have to check it out and mark it down in the box in the trailer, you know. But I mean, who keeps up? I mean, if they're not reliable, lots of times they're the tour manager possibly doing merch. Sometimes you have both tour manager and merch.
That's what Kaya does right now.
Through the years. But it's like you've got, you know, if they're, you know, then that's more work on you, which you already have a million things to do to monitor their honesty.
Right.
And yeah.
And when I get
done. It happened
to
me once.
Dang, I'm super sorry. I'm yeah. sure it's happened to me.
And I can't prove it, but it was pretty damn obvious whenever I had more people. I could tell we sold, I could see the merch floating around the venue. And at the end of the night, it was reported, you know, oh, we didn't sell any of those shirts or we didn't sell any of that. And I was like, no, I saw.
The bartenders are all yeah. wearing yeah. Oh, yeah. my shirt right now.
Don't you love that? Whenever they just, every gig you show up to, all the bartenders run up. What's the bartender rate? Do we got free shirts for the bartenders? And usually you try to hook them up, you know.
Yeah, we do a discount for sure. But yeah, it's really tough.
I'm not saying I hate that because it's great that they want to wear your shirt and promote it and stuff. But sometimes they just want it for free.
You give away five shirts. That's $125 of cash flow, really. Yeah. You know, it's not profit, but it's like, oh, man.
It's oh, man.
I only have so many mediums. I'm always like,
You always, the size you're out of that night and that shirt is the one everyone wants. Uh-huh. You know?
And it's the one all the bartenders got for free. It's always that one. Yeah. Okay, let me look at. Oh, well, we're like actually already. Wow, time has flown. It's champagne, Mark. It's champagne. It's,
yeah, because we're drinking champagne.
But you did talk about just really, really good people. And I don't want to like bash all the people that filled in for me because they're.
No, I don't want to have a bash fest because anyone who's ever filled in, I appreciate the offer, man. Thanks for doing it. Mm-hmm. It's not always working out, but the reliable guys, like I said, I won't book a show if I don't have my drummer, my regular drummer, my regular guitar player, and I would say my regular bass player, but I just haven't had a regular bass player in a while. It seems to be a revolving door, but it's the guys that you've had with me, like Court Jackson and Ken Furr. They've been with me. Court Jackson's freaking amazing. He's not like anyone else. He doesn't play like anyone else. He has his own style that's quirky but amazing.
He's so great. I love watching him play.
It's just unique and it's become like I don't want to play a show without that. Besides acoustic shows, you know, I do those alone, enjoy it, but I don't want to do a full band show without Cord. And he's my main harmony singer, and it's just I just love. I'm a fan. I literally listen to him every night because he just does like amazing, cool. He does the main things I want him to do, but then it's not structured. It's tons of ad-libbing, but I just love his taste. I love what he adds. It's just amazing. Yeah.
That's great.
And a solid ass drummer.
Totally. Well, I have some bass people that it's pretty crazy because people go through cycles of life, you know? And so they're like, Zeke Beninate was on the road with Charlie Robinson. So he's Robeson. Sorry. Did I?
Rob. It's okay.
Hey, Kat, how did I say that name? I don't know. But I love him and we're friends.
Yeah.
I just, for some reason, thought I was saying it wrong. Anyway, so Zeke filled in with us for a long time. He's a great fill-in player. He's just great, great hang. James Hurtless, who played with Josh Abbott for ever. He came in to do a fill-in bass gig and like nailed it. Like I didn't know that you could nail it like he did.
He's a pro, man. He's like rehearsed, singing harmony probably.
He was singing harmony above me.
Yeah.
Like higher than me.
Yeah. Guys, amazing.
He's so awesome.
When that's what you want, when you get someone like that just comes in and just
knocks it out of the park.
Like, I'm a pro. I know, like Ken Tondra. I know he does a lot of filling stuff. Amazing. Like that guy is never going to show up not fully freaking prepared.
Paul Eason either.
Yeah.
And Paul, I've seen Paul like do a couple of things and then he'll just really prepare. But I've seen him turn down a lot of things.
Because he doesn't have time to prepare.
He doesn't want to be anything less than great, which I think is really good advice. If you cannot be great, like don't, you know, it's not like we don't need fill-in money. It's just like if he doesn't have time, then he's, you know.
Yeah.
And then last thing about James Hurtless, just because I think this is funny, I was like, please take my gig. Like, I need a bass player. Like, please just take my gig. He was filling in all the time. And he was like, honey, I was on a bus with, I don't think he called me honey, but Bree. I was on a bus for for 9 years.
Yeah.
With great pay, with catering, with giant crowds, like, I'm not taking your shitty gig. And it was so funny. Like, it was just a total joke, but we died laughing.
Yeah.
But then he didn't take it.
Yeah.
I know he doesn't think it's that gig, but
another good fill in to mention is Michael Terabay. He filled in and did a great job.
Right.
On some bass for me for a good handful of shows.
Just make sure you have charts and your keys are in the same key or else he'll throw a little fit.
Yeah.
on his podcast.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Well, we talked about that on his podcast. He's never done that with me.
Gotcha.
But he's just
you don't want to tell somebody, here's the song, it's in G, and then you play it in A, and they're like, What? You didn't tell me.
Yeah, back when I was on his podcast, I was like, oh, I never do that. And I was like, ooh, I kind of do that. But now I'm a lot better about playing songs in the right keys. We have charts, we have board tape. Like, you know, we're more
good
prepared
notes.
Now.
Yeah, as long as you have good notes, you know, so that nothing will be awkward, you know, and surprise. Speaking of an awkward surprise, I'll tell you this real quick. I was doing a show opening for Ted Nugent. And at the horse race track up in Grand Prairie up there.
Cool.
And huge crowd, you know, it probably ended up being like 30,000-40,000 people. When we were playing, it was probably at least 25. And they said, all right, y'all get ready. Y'all go on right after this last race. They like want to finish the race and then they want to put the band on immediately. Everyone's gathered. So it's the last we're watching from the back of stage because it's right there in front of the track. And so they race the horses out. They're going like, wow, look at them. They're going around the track. Right around the last bend, a horse breaks its leg.
Don't say it. Don't say it. Boom! Don't say it. Don't
that
say it.
That leg is just flopping like this. And we're like, oh my God. And it's just flopping. And everyone, the whole crowd's like, stands to their feet, you know.
And then
the race ends. No one even pays attention to the end of the race because that horse, that poor horse, is like this. Well, then they bring out the truck and they wrap a curtain around the horse off the back of this truck. They have this whole little thing that comes out in a curtain. And obviously, they euthanize, you know, kill the horse right there and then tow it up into the truck. And literally, the whole crowd's on its feet, just like silence, like silence. Everybody's just watching this because it's playing out behind the stage, right where we're standing, right there, and everyone can see it. And they're just, and they put this poor horse down. And then right at that moment, you hear this voice goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, Mark McKinney." And we're like, awkward. Okay. And we jump out on stage and play. And
I don't like to drink too much.
And then throughout the whole show, like even when Ted came on, he kept referencing the dead horse. Ted Nugent's a nut. And he's like, yeah, how about that dead horse? Yeah. He was like, if we were over in France, they'd be cooking it. Yeah. He was just insane.
Like, my heart is broken, but I'm also sweating. Like, there's a lot of emotions with that.
It was the most awkward, you know, intro, and then Ted finishing the night off, like, referencing the dead horse, and it was...
Yeah!
It was, yeah! With his little headset on. It was amazing.
Well, on that note, I think that's a great place to end. So if you're going to fill in, don't suck.
Don't suck.
Or don't
make things
do
awkward.
It.
Or don't do it. Just don't take the gig if you're not willing to put in the homework. And it can't, I mean, you're a pro. It can't be that much homework, right? A few hours.
Right.
Memorize the stuff. Hell, even put some charts on the floor. I don't care.
Right.
You know, just
play the right.
Yeah.
Play the right things.
Yeah.
And I was just going to say, stay sexy and don't get murdered. That's the sign off for my favorite murder. But I just realized I don't have a sign off. So can we just go, yeah.
So the sign off is, yeah.
Dead horses.
Dead horses, yeah.
Perfect.
I'm going to sit right here and make the jukebox play sad songs. Because I think I need one more night of being alone. Someone rattle these lines.